And now,
it's time for
Inside Conan, an important Hollywood podcast.
Hi there.
Welcome, everybody, to another episode of Inside Conan, an important Hollywood podcast.
My name is Mike Sweeney.
And I'm Jesse Gaskell.
She is Jesse Gaskell, and we were writers on Conan. And this podcast is all about what's going on at Conan behind the scenes. And we have a great show for you today.
Things are very wacky right now because we're doing Conan at Home episodes.
Literally, the entire show is being done remotely. No two people getting together, everyone working in their own cubbyhole at home.
I actually shot something at home. I shot a commercial and I had to set up a little tripod and do it myself. And I felt like I was making a student film.
That came out great. It was called,
Mind Chicken.
Mind Chicken. It was an app that makes, well, I don't want to give it away.
Yeah, we shouldn't give it away.
But people should watch it.
Yeah, just know that every shot was painfully elicited by me alone at home. And then having to go like scroll through all the shots and hating them all because you just don't like looking at yourself on camera.
They came out great. You looked great.
Yeah, it was fine.
I'd be more worried about your dog interrupting
all the takes. Oh yeah, she did interrupt a lot of takes, especially the ones where I had chicken food? McNuggets in them. Oh. Yeah.
What dog can resist?
Basically dog food.
Did you feel like you were going insane sitting at home? Why am I doing
who
this
cares?
Again?
Yeah.
Who is this for?
I did, but it also was sort of nice because I didn't have a whole crew around me, like waiting to go to lunch, and they're all looking at me like, ugh, another take.
Shooting with the whole crew there. Sometimes we shoot stuff on the show. It's called the old show.
Yeah.
The pre-pandemic show where there's 20 people standing around. And if you're shooting it through our control room, they literally do have to break for lunch. And everyone is just staring at
They're counting down the seconds.
Oh,
and they're
why
are you keeping us from our sandwiches?
Like if you're like, well, you know, maybe. Even if you're thinking that in your brain, you can't say that out loud.
Yeah. Oh, no. I learned long ago that the only rule is just act like you know what you want. Even if you change your mind later, just be really confident in your bad decision the first time. One, I guess, unexpected positive side effect of everyone being home is that we got to talk to some people this week that don't live in LA, and we normally wouldn't get to chat with them.
Right. Very excited about this week's guests. They're actually a couple that met at the old Late Night with Conan show, and we thought it'd be great to talk to them. They're happily married with two beautiful young kids, and they talked to us after they put their kids to bed. It's Ellie Kemper and her husband, Mike Komen.
Both very successful in their own right.
Of course.
You probably know Ellie. She is the star of Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt, which she didn't even mention this, but there's a new episode out this week on Netflix. Like, didn't even promote it, which I think just means that she's some kind of angel.
We found out after the fact, and it's called Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt, of course, Kimmy versus the Reverend, and it's an interactive episode. So you get to decide how her adventure goes. Like she could get married or she could perform a rescue mission.
I can't wait to watch it.
Yeah. Especially an interactive show for a pandemic is perfect. You can really, that can eat up almost a day and a half.
Yeah. Well, and Michael Komen is also a successful writer, producer. He not only wrote on Late Night with Conan O'Brien, but he co-created Eagle Heart and Nathan For You.
And he's working on it's a secret project with
Nathan Fielder
for HBO. Yeah. And I guess HBO Max, that's something to look for too. That should be great.
So here's our delightful convo with Ellie and Michael.
Lovebirds. We're here with Ellie Kemper and her husband, Michael Komen. And we're here with Michael Komen and his wife, Ellie Kemper. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having us.
It's an honor.
Oh my God. It's like 5 a.m. where you are. You're in New York City.
No, we're actually in the Midwest. We're in St. Louis.
Is that true?
You just put on your radio voice. We're actually so soft.
Well, I feel you misrepresented. It was later than it was going to be. I thought.
I think you did.
Really, because I feel like I flooded my emails with CMT. I was so proud to write CMT after all the time.
Also, Michael, what is M? No one abides by Mountain Time. CST, Central Standard Time. Although no one.
Oh yeah.
But
the
it's
second
only,
there
it's
was a hint of a virus in the air, we fled to St. Louis.
Wow.
Wow. So you took the virus there.
Yes, right.
We were one of those flights out of New York. Yep.
On the CNN map of the hotspots, you could actually see a dot crossing the sky.
We're here with the super spreader family. Wow. So you've been locked down in you're based normally in New York City. So
that's right.
Did you ever imagine you'd be in St. Louis this long?
It's very strange. So the reason we're in St. Louis is I grew up in St. Louis. I'm from here. And we're staying at a friend's house, but the friends aren't here. And it's weird because we normally only come back to St. Louis for holidays or like obviously a visit to see my family. So it's for me, it's weird because my memories of childhood are colliding with this horrible, horrible, unreal time that we're all living in. And for you, I don't know what your experience has been.
Well, no, this has been totally positive for me because, well, we have two children and they're able to, we're some friends of Ellie's family let us stay in their pool house. So
I explained
in Michael's defense, he was going into more detail.
It's the pool house.
So he was only complimenting what you said. It wasn't that he wasn't listening.
He was yes anding.
If you're in the pool house, does that mean you also get control of the pool as well?
They're not opening the pool this year. It's not COVID related. It's just it's an old pool and they don't want to open it anymore. Totally understandable. But there will be no pool, just a house. Bum deal. I want out.
Of this free situation.
I mean, a pool house implies working pool.
Yep.
Yes. No, I never would have accepted this sanctuary had I known.
I'll show you the email.
Pool parties.
Pool house. It was consistently referred to as the pool house.
Slash cabana.
Yes.
Well, and you have two small children. So it does seem like kind of the ideal time to be stuck at home because then you don't feel like you're missing out on anything.
Yep.
Out in the world. It's not like you have to say no to all your friends' fun parties right now. Michael and Ellie, can we rewind a little bit into the past? Because you two are one of the only successful Conan couples.
I think it is.
Wait, have there been a lot of couples that didn't make it?
There were many.
There's only two other couples. another writer, right? Andrew Weinberg met his wife.
Who's the other couple? Were there two others?
Are there any?
People that actually met are still together. Oh, our head writer, Matt O'Brien.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, of course they did. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Good. Well, we're proud to be ranked among.
And then there's probably a lot of one night stands.
Oh, many.
We'll talk about.
Yes.
So, Ellie, you were an intern at Conan.
First of all, I was an old intern. Old in years. I was 25. I turned 25 during my time there. That's
old. She was an old intern.
How did you end up being an intern?
My younger sister, Carrie Kemper, nay Kemper, now Dugan. My younger sister was an intern there, like when at an appropriate age, 20, 21. And then 24. She, 24. Well, she got me an interview with Aaron Cohen, who we all know. And then when I was 24, and I got the unpaid internship. I got it.
Well, that's why when I met you, I thought you were Carrie's younger sister.
Oh, right.
Not for any physical. I just thought you were there after
because
Carrie.
I was there after her. Yeah. I know. But no, I was living in New York, all right, trying to figure out what to do. And so I thought, oh, well, I get an internship.
And you were the casting intern.
Yes, I was the casting intern.
Oh. Well, were you hoping to be an actress at that point? I mean, was that?
Yes. I was doing.
So that seems really smart.
Well, thanks. In retrospect, it was. At the time, I feel like if you're an intern, I guess you're learning the ropes. You're seeing how television production happens. And and I guess because of these aspirations to become an actress, I guess that's why. I didn't interview specifically for the casting department, but that's where I was put. Yes, I was doing improvisation at Upright Citizens Brigade Theater and the People's Improv Theater. And that's what I was doing when I was in New York at that time.
And I remember there was some satellite TV channel that we did that was, I can't imagine that it aired. It was awful.
It aired.
Frank Smiley. Frank Smiley was the star of it, is how bad this was. And
Frank's still a producer on the show.
It was called Dinner with Al Spinata. It was such a utterly like unprem. There's the entire concept revolved around that he wore an undershirt and spoke in a loud voice.
I just remember he threw food at the camera.
He almost got punched by the cameraman because he threw a tomato at Kurt Decker's camera.
Yeah.
But
and this was one that you had pitched, Michael?
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
I'm hoping it was Frank's idea and I was just helping, but I think it might have been something I actually pitched. But I asked Cecilia if Ellie could be the daughter in the
Cecilia was the casting director.
Yeah.
Cecilia was the casting director.
And you went and you had seen Ellie around the office.
I'd like to take credit. Yes. Yeah. I definitely thought that she would just look funny on TV.
But you also kind of hoping that, this would be an overture?
Yeah.
I don't think,
I got you this gig.
Well, this is also something that is, I also feel like is the reason we've, have a good relationship or a good marriage is that we were friends for like 2 years before we ever went on a date.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
And we were good friends. We talked a lot and we hung out, but there was not even the scintilla of romance on your end until we've known each other for years.
Yeah. Right. Right.
Oh, wow. So Ellie, you were long gone, I guess, from the office. But you guys were still keeping in touch.
Oh, from the Conan. Yes.
From being an intern.
Yeah, I was. Yes, because I was only an intern for how long are those? 6 months, probably?
A semester, right. Yeah.
A semester. And well, for those
still
who are in college, those who are not out in the real world, not getting paid for their work. And that's a diss on me, not on the internships. Internships are not paid. That's just how it goes. Yeah, in order to get the internship, I got college credit at the Pit, the People's Improv Theater. So that's how I got around that.
Smart.
Yeah, really dodged that. Yeah, figured it out. But we continue to be friends. Real good scam for any of you aspiring interns out there who are above the age of 22. Okay. So, yeah, we continued to hang out. And also, I did see more of you because Cecilia, bless her, would put me in sketches on your show. So that was post internship.
Yes. And then the great thing about actors on late night and on all the Conan shows, if you're in something and everyone likes you, you start getting used a lot.
Yeah.
Which is great.
That was awesome.
Most of the time it was like a form of cheating because you knew who Conan liked and then you would cast them in your piece purely to manipulate him into using it in the show.
That's a big secret.
Yes.
It's just a success on the Conan show. I'd see people bring something into rehearsal and the curtain would open a rehearsal and I'd be like, oh no, they cast him.
Yes.
Because I knew it was someone Conan didn't like, just wasn't a fan of as a performer.
Right, because it also works the other way, where if there's somebody that he saw one thing that he didn't like, he's soured on them forever.
Poisons well. It's a tough business.
So, Ellie, you were one of the ones that he liked.
I hope so.
Oh, my God. You were great.
I hope so. I don't know.
You were in a ton of sketches.
I really won the lottery because maybe we trace it back to Carrie Kemper because getting that internship, I got to know everyone there.
I
got a husband. I got my two kids.
A career.
No, I mean, it was a very successful husband hunt.
It really was. It's so weird because, Michael, you seemed older then than you do right now. I've said that many times.
Well, no, because that was the front I would put up was that I was...
Wore an ascot.
But you seemed like you had this whole lifetime before. I don't know.
I agree with you.
You. Right?
I was like, wow, this guy has absorbed a lot of old man stuff.
You're right.
I don't know. You just talk about Italian movies from the early 50s. I was like... What did he do?
It was all just in the search for some kind of personality.
Your days in L.A., like he led this life in L.A. that seems so, I mean, you wrote for, you led this mysterious life writing for Mad TV, but it really was so strange because you got that job at such a young age.
Well, the first half of my life like was much person. More eventful than the second. The second half is much happier, but there was a lot of... just stuff that happened earlier. So I had like good stories for a while.
And then
I'm sure there have been many great events in the second half of your life
The best event. The best events happened in the second half.
To begin, we have the pool house.
Right, right. Yeah. Didn't you get a job at Mad TV when you were like 19?
Yeah.
That's crazy. No,
well, you know, there was an interesting job when I was 19. My first job, I was got hired to be the assistant for a comedian named Barry Sobel, who is doing a five-minute talk show for Comedy Central. We ended up...
That was Quibi ahead of its time.
Right? I don't think it's... I think they aired. I mean, they did air, I think, at least once. But they wanted to do these programs in between their other... after their movies, because they ended at strange times. And I think it was the first time that Jimmy Fallon was ever on TV. It was he did stand-up on this. Fred Willard was the sidekick on that. And I started... I was getting Barry coffee and stuff. But then we got along very well, and we ended up writing a lot of the show together. And then Fred Willard, just purely out of kindness, I wrote him a letter a couple years later, and he came to our house to do a sketch show that my roommate, Todd Glass, was doing as a TV pilot. Fred Willard's agent is the reason I have got the job at Mad TV. So I hadn't really written anything other than that one.
So you can write to Fred Willard and he'll come to your house to do
that? I mean, I wish it was more complicated than that. I actually realized when he came to the house, he didn't remember me. He didn't know that we had met before. I just assumed that he would. But he got a letter saying, we're trying
to... really just showed up.
Yeah, just saying, we're doing a show one night. Would you mind doing this? And he came... I mean, this is before email. So he responded to the letter and said, okay.
Oh my God.
And he said, as long as you don't film it or something and show it anywhere. And so he did it just to do something for an evening. It was incredible.
Oh, wow.
Truly for the love of the craft.
Yeah. I'm emailing him right now.
He won't get it. You have to mail him.
That's right.
You have to send a letter. Well, wow. So Michael, when you started at Conan, then you must have still been pretty young.
I think I was 24. I wasn't. Too young. Yeah. I mean, I'm sure I was about the same age as Andrew Weinberg, right, when he started, and he had just been an intern.
You guys collaborated a lot together. We just learned. I did not know this. That I guess you guys were either just friends or maybe had gone out on one or two dates and then hadn't talked for a while. And then
I was just thinking of this. Yes, this is incredible. No, I'll tell you exactly what happened. We were friends for a long time. Then we sort of started dating a little bit. And I'll be honest, I cut it off. I was like, that's enough. I did. I said, I mean, are you humiliated?
No, I remember it really well. What happened was we went out on one date, like actual official date. And it was a nice time. We liked it. We obviously liked each other. And you giggled a bunch. And then you told me that you didn't want to go out after that.
Yeah.
And I got really sullen and mad.
Yeah,
and
right,
we didn't
right,
talk
right,
for
right.
a long time.
You guys
time.
Know Michael's a little bit...
petulant.
Petulant. Yes. You're childlike in that way. You sort of whine and mope. And so, yes, you grew very sour and then you just decided not to talk. We didn't talk altogether, right? It was just, I guess you were probably embarrassed, right? I mean, is that why people get angry? But
well,
anyway.
Of course I was embarrassed.
Yeah. Yeah. But it's correct.
I've heard that's
you've never been angry
people
before.
People have anger.
I read that. Right. So we weren't talking. And then, see, it's all the members of my family who did this because... We weren't talking for a while. My mom emailed all the time. My mom and I emailed all the time, talked on the phone. My mom sent me an email that said, oh, how is Michael doing? I saw that, you know, he's sick. Conan went to his apartment to visit him. I saw it on the show and I had missed that episode. I'm a loyal watcher of Conan, but I hadn't seen that episode. And I was like, oh, and I looked it up online, I guess, right? There was the internet then. And I looked it up and there you were. And it's a very funny sketch. I don't know. Do we still have access to it?
It wasn't a sketch.
Yeah.
It wasn't a sketch. It was a remote.
Oh, it was just
real.
Probably
put it up on YouTube when this podcast comes up.
Yes. It's really great.
It's great. And
yeah, because it was basically
I think
all
you're really
spontaneous.
Exaggerating the quality of that.
You don't like... You
no,
don't like,
I was
well,
genuinely
you were
ill.
That too. You weren't that ill.
And no, I had strep throat. Andrew Weinberg deserves the credit. He suggested, why doesn't Conan just come to my apartment and see if I'm really sick? I don't know what I was thinking, but to look like I was a team player, I continued to send in some jokes, but they were the...
From home.
I put no effort into them. They were really bad. And then he came and read them out loud in my apartment.
Oh, no.
And then I feel terrible about this. But the doorman let him up without calling me. And so, I think what happened was then George, the doorman, got nervous at the last second and called me right before Conan knocked. And he said, you have someone coming up. And he hung up. And then Conan knocks and I answer right away. So, which I felt bad because that makes it look kind of fake. But then on the way out, I think they cut this out of.
Were you at least wearing a bathrobe or something? Like you were.
I was just wearing like pajama pants and yeah.
That's
to
convincing.
Be fair, you don't look that sick. I think because you're trying to put on a good front, you don't look that sick. And I've read some of the comments on YouTube video or wherever I saw it, and they are like, he's not sick.
No, people were like, what kind of, shit has a job like that and he's faking sick to get out of it? And then one comment even said, I said, this is why we're going to go to war with Iran. Just my total lack of character. When it aired, when we left, we walked past the doorman and I was like, great job, George. Nice security. And then...
Who said that?
I think I did. Or I said, thanks a lot, George. And then Conan said, yeah, great security got here. And then my super went crazy. And I had this very strict Romanian super he said, you must edit that out of any rerun.
Yep.
That must never air.
Yeah.
This building.
Because anyone could pose as a late night host.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
Any thief could just come and say they're filming a late night show.
Oh, no. He was like, he thought the value of the building would plummet because of this. And he tapped the side of the building and he goes, Michael, these bricks are worth more than gold.
Michael, we are about to be plunged into war with Iran.
Thanks because to you.
So anyways, I have nothing but bad memories of that.
No, but have a better memory now because my mom saw it, alerted me to your poor state. And then emailed or called you or something to see how you were doing. And then that started.
Is that true? That's the reason?
Michael.
Oh my gosh, that's incredible.
It's like a rom-com.
Yeah. It is a true rom-com. The setting is Manhattan. Like, everything is out of a movie. And then...
There's a doorman.
Oh, yeah, there's a doorman.
There was.
There was once. He's gone. And anyway, it opened the communication again.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think... Can I go back for a second?
Because
there's something I forgot to mention, and I feel like it could upset him, is that the only reason I ever got a job at Conan was because... When I worked at Mad TV, and there were like three of us who worked together, and I don't think any of us really liked it there. One of them went on to be a great Saturday Night Live writer, and the other one was a former Conan writer named Greg Cohen, who I became very good friends with, and he recommended me to you. And I think that's the only reason you would have hired me is on Greg's recommendation.
I love Greg's hilarious.
Yes.
I love Greg.
He's my favorite. Right. I don't think I've never met anyone funnier than him. And he, but I think literally just out of spite for Mad TV, like we hated it there so much. And he was treated so badly that I think just to undermine the show, he was trying to recommend me to you so I would be taken out of the writer's room there.
Well, it worked. Got in a plug for Greg
I love
Cohen.
A spite hire.
I thought you had left the show before because we didn't ever like to hire anyone who's already on another show.
Oh, interesting.
You didn't work there.
It
when
was
Greg
well known. I think I would have left anyway. But what?
You didn't work there. I'm so sorry. I'm interrupting your story.
I love this romantic story. And let me just backtrack 20 years to Mad TV.
Well, I'm always worried. I'm going to slight.
Shout out.
I'm turning a slight.
I want to go back
Greg.
To the love story because this is my bread and butter.
I also love that Ellie's mother is a critical linchpin.
I know.
And I feel like Michael's not acknowledging this. He's like, Greg Cohen.
She must have been a Michael fan.
She was a huge Michael fan. And I have looked back at emails that I sent her at the time. And I said, I go, Mom, it's really weird. We are not at all dating. We hang out all of the time. I've never had a friend like this. Because we hung out so often, but there was no...
Well, I'm very moved. Ellie's mother is a really brilliant, funny woman.
She and is.
That
I,
she would have
everyone shout
given
out.
Me, threw me a bone like that back then is incredible.
She is the reason. But, I mean, maybe we would have run into each other otherwise, but... Yeah. That's why we started talking again.
When you started talking again, what was different about it for you then, Ellie? Because you initially thought that that wasn't...
I think...
That you weren't interested romantically.
Yeah, I think that we can...
Well, no one said she wasn't interested.
I think it was. I think
she had other considerations. What is this?
Remember, I was like, I need to focus on my career. It wasn't that different. I think it was still that we were just friends. Because I seem to remember us being friends for like so long.
No, we were. I think we were friends for 2 years at least. You were so hard to read. You never discussed your personal life. I didn't know anything. I never heard of you dating anybody. I didn't know anything about that part of your life. We would walk around a lot and we'd hang out at the, I remember there was like an ATM. We would
always go to Michael, Chase one Bank. Time you went to that ATM to get cash.
Our this ATM. Sounds romantic.
I'm worried about my son developing memories at 3. I don't remember anything from 24 to 32.
Oh, but I remember, can I say this? Because I'm so upset about this still. There was one time was we got in a big, this is after we were dating. We got into a fight. I had this late night hoodie from you. It was just, it wasn't like you gave it to me. I just had it. Mm-hmm. It wasn't like wearing your letter jacket or whatever. And I was so mad at you when I took the hoodie. We were in a fight. You were gone. I took the hoodie and I ran up the street to Housing Works and I just gave it away to so Housing Works is a thrift shop where you can give.
Yeah.
And I gave it away. And then a week later, like we had made up or whatever. And I was so mad because it was such a great, do you know what this is?
So mad. I donated it to the needy
and got the tax receipt
and kept it.
I don't know who.
But then you regretted it. You wanted it back.
I wanted it back. Not only it was very comfortable, but also I was sentimental about it. I'm sad that it. I hope whoever has it now is having.
I have a closet full of old Conan stuff. I mean, I'll send you pictures and maybe.
You have that. Oh, great. And I can take it out from that. I would love that. I bet you have this.
I don't know why you don't wear it more. I mean, the giant redheaded caricature on the back of every piece of clothing makes it evergreen.
This one.
It really turns heads. Things just kind of clicked after that and you started dating?
Again, I feel like it was a while.
How do you make that transition? Because that's so hard.
Yeah,
it was a definite decision. It was like...
Yes, it was very abrupt.
I do remember.
We did go from this limbo into suddenly we were real relationships.
But then there were many... I feel like... Well, you don't like acknowledging this, but there was like a very... After we started dating, which I can't remember the timeline exactly, except that we were friends for so long... I stopped talking, then you got sick. My mom like saved our relationship and then we started becoming friends again. And then whenever whenever it turned into
sick for one day.
He got gravely ill.
That's what it took. Then we started dating, but then I do remember because we had like a substantial breakup period. But I think that was that after the writer's strike?
No, because we were dating during the writer's strike.
I know. So was it?
Yes.
After?
And then there was another period when we weren't together, but I don't really remember when that was.
The male never remembers that.
You real Sam and Diane energy here.
It's very exciting. Maybe this will help because one of my favorite pieces that you did was right after the iPhone came out. And it stars both of you guys.
I know. Mm. Well, you...
The first iPhone came out and you showed all the things it did and it was like 20 different uses.
And it was so big. I watched this earlier too.
Yeah, it's great.
It's funny how big the iPhone is.
It's so crazy that the iPhone came, that there wasn't an iPhone.
Yeah.
Prior.
And we all knew. Yeah.
I know.
That's weird. But I remember, where were we in our relationship?
Were you guys dating then?
I don't think we were.
Well, because you end up in bed together in the sketch.
I know.
Yes, I never would have taken those kind of liberties, would I, if we weren't dating? Because we were in a bed together.
You just wrote a sketch where you were in bed together.
I know. Michael.
That's such a classic Comedy Guy move.
I know.
She's getting a sonogram.
Am I getting a sonogram?
The part that I remember, you know, Jesse, when you're... filming a love scene, it's the least romantic thing in the world. It's so technical. No, but the part I remember being like, oh boy, it was when there was some part where we were in a bathroom and you were blow drying
your hair.
Yeah. Mm. And it looked the way it would look if you actually were like in the bathroom. So, and that felt very...
I was so thrilled to get to be in that. I'm trying to remember where, like at what time of year that was. I just remember it being so...
I think it was the summer of... It was just a month or two after his sore throat healed.
Oh, it was? Oh, okay.
Well, the thing I really remember about that is I remember there was some shot, it was so terribly shot with Jason Chalemi, where he was getting something squirted in his eyes and he was clawing like a rat.
Yeah.
And I... It was just the funniest piece of bad acting. Oh, right. It was Mace, of course.
Yeah. And Brian Stack narrates the whole thing, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's a really funny sketch.
Yeah.
I do think I know what happened, though. Is Ellie's mom saw that sketch, emailed Ellie and said, "You look like a couple. It's impossible that you two aren't dating. Just get it over with."
I mean, this is a commercial for Apple. Tell me you're not. No,
Michael still looks sick. I don't know.
You've got to save him.
I wish I could remember when anything happened. Did you find this? Was the one bad thing about that job was that every single day was spent in the same, like, three places, like your office, the studio, and that hallway on 6. And I ate the same thing every single day. I went to work the same way. And I have no idea of, like, what happened during which years. Like, I couldn't tell you what happened in 2005 or 2003. Like, it all blends together.
It sounds like preparation for being in lockdown during a pandemic.
Right.
Yes.
The way you're describing it. Isn't that most jobs?
Yeah.
Is that everyone's job? Sorry. I just realized that is everyone's job.
If you're doing the same thing every day.
That's just normal adult life.
Well, not everyone eats the same thing every day.
That's true.
Unusual.
That's true.
What were you eating every day?
Turkey burger at the commissary every single day. The breadcrumbs to my grave will just be little turkey burgers that I must have had.
As an intern, I never ate at the commissary. I wonder why. I wonder what I did.
I got like a 10% discount.
Yeah.
I don't know. There was a lot of the food in the. Well, sometimes when we splurged, Weinberg and I would go to Cucina and Co. in the concourse. But that's not why people tune into this podcast.
Should
you start recording? Should we get this going?
Yeah. Have you two collaborated on anything since Conan?
No.
And Matthew?
No.
We haven't.
No, and Michael, I remember at one point, again, I don't know if it was when we were friends or dating, but you were like, oh, we should write a sitcom together. Again, it was probably we were friends and you were trying to you're like, oh, you can start off.
It's like my filthy mitts on you.
And
it's not
going to
be in a sitcom.
He's a master manipulator.
You had the idea of that, but no. And now we haven't have we collaborated on anything?
I don't think so. No. I mean, when are we ever, can you imagine the time we have together that we use it trying to write it?
Well, what do you think of that?
Well, you're both very busy. Yeah.
But that can be, do we know who are the couples who do that? I feel like that could be dangerous. It has the potential to be dangerous.
I never found it
becoming
when couples did that together. I mean,
it just seems like there's too much, there's
a lot of age.
It can get competitive.
Yeah. Especially if you didn't start out that way. I mean, there's that old adage, like, never hire friends to do, you know what I mean?
Right.
Because
it gets messy.
Having fights. So,
yeah.
Well, there's a great, I know this is old timey, but have you ever seen Born Yesterday, that movie? It's
you
a great movie.
Man.
Goldie Hawn?
Judy Holliday. And anyway, the couple that made that was married, Ruth Gordon and Garson Kanin. Oh. They were like a famous screenwriting couple. I think it works well when both people are in the same profession, maybe. I think if they're like two writers or two actors who do stuff together.
Well, I think that's when it would get competitive if you're in the same. But anyway, yeah. At the end of the day, then where do you go? You're both still with each other. So you're like, oh, well, how can we?
I know. Well, I always wonder, like, Joan Beatty and her husband.
Right, you don't know when to end the day.
Right.
You can't share stories like, oh, this asshole I'm working with.
Right.
Oh, wait, it's you.
Right there.
That's true. Part of the joy of being in a relationship is talking shit about your coworkers.
That's so true. I love.
Easy, Michael. Other people are listening. Just stay positive.
Sorry.
Greg Cohen's positive.
I know. I just I love trashing people, Ellie.
Oh, my God. It's the worst when I trash people to my wife and I can tell it's like, oh, no, she agrees with them.
Right.
I'm the problem.
I know. I hate that.
Every time.
I hate that. Yeah. Does she pretend to side with you? Or you just see it in her eyes that she's...
I see it in the eyes.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, I presuppose it. I always assume I'm the blame for everything, so...
Yeah.
I just look for evidence all around me.
Yeah.
To reaffirm. It's always there. I always find it.
You do, yeah.
I'm a monster.
Well, I was recently complaining about some job to you, and I realized, I complain about most jobs. So, and then I started to think, I think the problem is me. But Michael's very patient. Oh, this is interesting. So you know how each relationship, I thought that my friend Joe came up with this, but I think it's like a well-known, again, adage. It's every relationship has a gardener and a rose.
Yes, we all know this. That.
Yeah, and it turns out it's true. But one person has to be the nurturer, I guess. And I do think, Michael, I think you were a little needier than I was. And then I came along, it became clear that I was the one who was going to be the needy one. And I've noticed, I think that people say people don't change, but I think you have.
I think there was actual growth on my end on of your relationship end, yeah. that I became.
Oh, you, yeah. The rose had growth.
The rose yes. had, the rose grew and transformed into a human gardener.
And a gardener.
And I'd like to blame it on being an only child because I thought.
Oh, I don't think any of that's
no,
true.
No, I don't think that is true. But I was a very selfish person, and I think it became less so because of you.
Oh, I wasn't going to say selfish. I think that it was I had bigger tantrums than you did, and then I got to still have them. But that's interesting because people change. I'm here to tell you.
Well, maybe they you'll do. Keep switching yeah. back too. Maybe
well,
at
that's
one
true.
Point, you'll
it's
switch again.
A, yeah, it's not a role for life. Yeah.
You'll be, yeah, it'd be nice you'll to be have Michael start again. Throwing tantrums again.
I just have to get sick again.
Didn't Michael throw tantrums? I mean, not like out of control, but wouldn't you have little tantrums at work sometimes?
No.
I mean,
yes.
I mean,
well, why, you used to refer to it as my period.
No, I mean, when you'd get upset about something, it would just make me laugh. Your voice goes up a bit and it's very enjoyable.
Yeah, I know. It's like a squirrel coming in to complain.
Exactly. Get that squirrel out of the office. Well, you always had a great relationship with Conan where you guys, I think one of the reasons he went down to your apartment to check on you, he wouldn't normally do that with someone else. It's because you had a great needling relationship.
I know. I always wish that I actually had felt better. And
so you could
just fought him.
Yeah.
I don't know what that relationship was, but it went from him needling me to mild needling of each other to physical violence by the time I left the show.
That's the normal course for employer
employee. It's like a brother relationship.
Yes.
The brother you never had.
Yeah.
I don't know that relationship so well, but it was, I've never seen anything like it really. Because
I just remember one week we all went to Los Angeles. I forget what we were shooting, but we were in the parking lot of Jerry's Diner. My thing with Conan was that I didn't understand limits. Like, so if there was any sort of mild, like, pushing from someone, I would immediately start, like, thrashing my arms and grabbing at them. I think what happened, I did something where Conan, like, made some probably joke about my face, and then I grabbed his pants pocket and yanked it. Like, a very witty thing to do. It's like, yank on someone's pants. And then he noticed his pants are torn, and then he completely ripped the shirt off my body.
It was like brute force.
And then I had to sit down in Jerry's Deli with like literally rags. And that's the only time I just didn't understand what is this relationship?
It sounds like dominant submissive.
I know, it's very strange, Michael.
It wasn't like we then, like the two of us, like got a beer after. Like there's always people around. It was just this.
Yeah, I was there. Hey, yeah. He picked up the tab.
Yeah.
Totally normal to me.
I have a question. I don't know if either of you have anything that you can talk about, but what is your experience right now being locked down in St. Louis? Are you working on anything? Is stuff just kind of on hold?
Michael is.
No, I was lucky. I've been working on this HBO show that is mostly a documentary style shooting. So we had most of the show and we're able to edit over a combination of Zoom and one other program. So actually it's kind of, we're just finishing work like we normally would.
That's great.
And it's been like a very nice little escape.
It's really lucky that you were done shooting and all of it.
Yeah.
I mean,
very good timing. When's that show coming out? Are you allowed to say?
I don't know. We don't have an air date. I'm hoping over the summer. It's something I've been working on with Nathan Fielder and this great.
You worked
great,
on Nathan for you, right?
Mm-hmm.
Every season.
Mm-hmm. And then
an amazing show.
The best show.
Oh, thanks.
Yeah.
Incredible.
And then there's this guy that Nathan met named John Wilson, who's this really talented documentary filmmaker who has his own style of. Completely own style of making these films, and they're all at this thing called johnsmovies.com. But anyway, that's what we've been working on. Well, what's happening? Is Conan doing shows right now?
He is.
Yes.
We're doing it all remotely.
Every night.
So what are you doing for that? Is it just Zoom?
Via Zoom, and then there's comedy every night, and it's all being made by individual craftsmen.
Yeah.
Working together over the internet, you know, either via
I filmed
Zoom.
A commercial on a little, yeah. I had that, a little mini tripod. That's hearing
Have you found it that it's helpful in a way to like you, it's exciting to have to come up with stuff?
I think
at your
so.
House that you shoot with a phone. That seems like it could be
I think
fun.
Any change in your, you know, daily schedule.
Oh, yeah.
Is initially exciting. And then right. after 2 days, it's like, ugh.
Right.
Yeah. This again.
But it's also so much funny. Like when the audience, when people know that you had to make this at home, I feel like.
Right. They're very forgiving, so much more fun to watch. I appreciate. Yeah.
And that's what everyone's like at the very beginning. I felt like, what is, of just this current condition? I was like, what is this? You're just seeing the insides of everybody's home. What are, it's amazing how quickly it's become normal. We haven't been able to watch that much stuff, but I watched the Today Show one morning and I was like, wait, that's Savannah's home. Yeah. It's just like everything is, but that's what, it's normal now. I wonder what will, like in the fall, I guess maybe you'll just do shows with no audience, right? I don't know.
I don't know. It's, that's the big, or do you have people sitting, you know, 6 feet apart? So you've got 50 people in a theater, but they're spread out.
But they're spread, right. It's, but that's what Sweden is doing. I think right now.
Well, I think if everyone wears a mask
in their cars,
can't they go?
Everything will be a drive-in.
Yeah, or all drive-in theaters.
Right. Yeah, they're all coming back.
Well, I have one other last question.
I just have one more thing to say of Greg Cohen, but please go ahead.
Do you remember I wanted to set Greg Cohen up with Carrie, my sister who got me the internership? I mean, years ago, before Carrie had a boyfriend. That's how much I love him.
Run it by your
that
mother.
Was years
I really
ago.
Forgot. I forgot. Yeah.
Your mother's like, I love that Greg Cohen. Got to do something for Greg.
Figure it out.
All comedy writer son-in-laws. Well, we like to ask all of our guests if you have one piece of advice that you could give to somebody who wants to do what you're doing. You know, thinking it could really be anything. It could be in how to get started, how to, you know.
Fred Willard's mailing address.
I'm going to go first because, for me, Michael, you're going too far. Our earbuds are going to
work out. Oh, yeah, we're sharing earbuds.
Adorable. You too.
We love each other. We share everything. My advice to aspiring, I guess, actors would be, there's nothing funny about this, would be to create as much of your own content as you can, which... Now it's such a different era. It feels like there's so many more platforms to create on with that it's even, I don't know, it feels more accessible now. But, you know, as an actor, you're a lot of the time you're waiting for things to come your way, a script to land on your doorstep, your agent to call. But I think in order to get going, you have to take charge and create as much as you can. And I guess not all actors are or should be writers, but I think it's about taking control so that you feel, I think that also gives you confidence. So I would say to anyone trying to become an actor to create as much of your own content as you can.
We've never discussed, I'm not like, this isn't like I'm setting up Ellie. I really don't know. But do you feel like because you did improv and you met a lot of people in that world that made a difference in the option, the offers that you had and the opportunities you had?
Sure. Are you recommending, don't recommend the UCB theater.
I know that just closed.
So what are you trying to dangle in front of?
I just mean like, I feel like the only thing I know is you kind of want to like rub elbows with people who have similar interests.
Absolutely. Yes. And yes, I
literally elbows now because we can't shake.
Yes. I'm trying to be responsible.
Michael, that's absolutely right. And and you could apply that to, I guess, most industries, but
it's always exciting when you first meet people with the same interests and sensibilities.
Oh, yeah.
And it's like, oh, okay.
You didn't know that they were there.
Right.
I think that's what the improv theaters did. Because I didn't even know that was, I knew about Chicago and everything. But then when you, like that was a big improv town. But then you came to New York and you're like, oh, these people, they like doing what I'm doing. Yeah, it's a great discovery.
Yeah. And then you have this kind of natural support system.
Yes.
That you don't even realize is a support system. People you're doing the same stuff with are also become your friends.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's so funny because like when we were at Conan, so many of the writers at Conan had come from Second City and always hung out at UCB. Brian McCann and John Glazer and
Brian Stack
and Kevin Dorff. So that was my whole like social life. Like I would not have had any social life if it wasn't for this other organization that I had no part of.
But if it wasn't
for the improv world, I don't know what I would have done at night. Like those were all the people I would see.
What's your advice?
Listen to Ellie.
God damn it. Yeah, she got it right.
She took yours.
She's a lot more successful than I am anyway. I'll never make that kind of dough. I would, if you feel like enthusiasm for something, I think that's a sign that you might be good at it. So you should listen to that. So whatever you shouldn't talk yourself out of something that you want to do because you feel like you're not destined to do it or like you feel like, well, too many other people will want to do that. If you like something, it is probably a sign that that's what you should do.
That's good advice, too.
Great,
very valuable, Michael.
Don't listen to naysayers.
No.
I mean, especially once you start creating stuff, having, you know, your own personal conviction about your taste and about your comedy sensibility is really important because you are going to have so many notes from various sources.
And yes. But this is, I think, the tricky thing now is that even though so many people have come from UCB and I feel like it's improved the world of comedy a lot, I guess the tricky thing is to have your own taste and just stick by it and not feel like you need to agree with everybody with who's in the same field as you are.
Right.
Sometimes it's trickier now.
Yeah, right.
When you think about your favorite things you just love, often they're from one or two voices as opposed to something being done by committee. It automatically gets watered down.
It's so true. And because to me, like, and you notice TV shows, like, at any certain period will all sort of sound like each other.
Right.
Like, the people all have the same rhythms. And
right.
And yeah, but I feel like the things that really, really hit home with you are usually just some one person who, when you're young, you just, like, sit upright. You can't, something about it just grabs your attention. And you don't really know what it is.
That's interesting.
I mean, have that when you were young? Like, was there somebody that you just...
Yeah. And you put a lot of eggs in their basket. Like, you confessed in how their career goes. And
right.
Totally.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and then later on, you end up hearing stories about how they were told no or, you know, they got all this criticism from people. And you're like, what? No, that person's a genius.
Well, it's the weirdness of like that you hear something and I assume like it's like if you get into music or any field that you really if it's kind of driven by your just like you're like needing to do it. But it is to come across something when you're young and it's like, what is this? And to like need to absorb all of it like constantly.
Well, and by the way, that's like, really lucky to have that.
It is lucky. Oh, it's so lucky.
Yeah.
Something has sparked at such a young age.
But you know, life seems like it's going to be so long, but you look back and I still feel like, oh my God. Yeah. My life has been pretty much shaped by something that happened when I was 14.
What was that, Michael?
I just mean, you know, you just see something you like.
And now it's crazy. Like in the old days, you'd have to, if you saw something on TV, you'd have to wait 7 months to see that person.
Right.
Yeah. Now you can just, in 2 hours, watch everything that person's ever done.
Yes.
It's crazy.
I don't know how I feel about that, but yes.
I know, it's so true.
My sons do that.
Burn out on your greatest love in a weekend.
Next. Yeah.
Well, thank you for hanging out with us after your kids
thank
went
you
to sleep.
For,
do you want to
so
get
nice.
Any extra material that you can replace other boring sections with?
Oh, yes.
Really,
it's all going to be
for over
very
hour,
jittery
so
about the quality of that.
Don't worry, Michael, no Michael Komen.
You'll be cut out. Thank you so much for talking with us. This, first of all, in addition to enjoying the podcast, it's so nice to talk to people. We've only been talking to each other.
This is the longest conversation we've had with anyone since we got here.
So thank you for providing that.
Of course.
It's so nice.
Oh, I'm glad the bar was low.
Yes.
The only outside conversation we've had, my son talks to my mother every day. Exclusively about animals. And so this
very
is the
sweet.
Only, yeah.
It's very sweet.
There's so much to talk to both of you about, but we thought since this kind of rare chance to get you two together, we'd kind of talk about, since you have such a cool
your story.
Background.
Yeah,
your story.
I could talk about it all day long.
I do recommend they talk to you at some point again.
Michael, you keep not answering exactly what they just put out.
Yeah, you two need to
You both have separate careers that we didn't really cover at all.
Right,
And no need because we both were here. You know what? In a way, the relationship is our career. It's our love career.
Maybe you're both the gardener.
Maybe it turns out I do some nurturing as well.
That means there are no flowers. Just no. Gardeners.
It's too.
Well, oh, my fear sentiment. I don't have, I have to say, I am the luckiest man in the world. And I, you know, I said this to Conan once. I said this to
told
Conan.
Him you were the luckiest man. In the
no,
world.
I didn't. I tell yes. I think I made him uncomfortable when I said this. But the same thing is true with you, Mike. That so many of the best things in my life are from you because you hired me on that show, and it was one of the best things that ever happened in my life. Yeah, and it's the reason I met Ellie and. Almost all the things I got to do after that. So I really do appreciate it.
Yeah.
Oh, well, gee. I just do what Greg Cohen tells me to do.
Yeah. We all do.
Well, I'm glad
so
it worked out.
So sentimental during this time.
I know. Yeah. I know. Quarantine tears.
Delicious. Yeah.
Tugging at the heartstrings there.
So sweet.
Now I'm crying.
Thank you, Ellie and Michael.
Yeah. And you let us know when you get to leave St. Louis? I'm curious.
Yeah. I'm so curious to know. We don't know where we're going.
Right.
I feel like New York is with two small kids is not ideal right
yeah,
now.
Yeah, if you have any suggestions.
You mean suggestions?
What's the next pool house?
Relocate for a year. Yeah, right. Just stay at the pool house. Eventually they have to open that pool.
I was going to say find a new pool house with a real pool.
Yeah, yeah exactly. That's objective number one. But yeah. Well, anyway, everyone in the world will figure out what to do. Thank you guys so much for
Thank you guys
us.
Yeah, so much.
Thank you.
This is great.
And that was our interview with Ellie and Michael.
Yes. Hopefully they got some sleep after that. It was getting late where they were.
They wanted to keep talking. It was clear that they had not talked to other adults in a while.
It's true. That's when we strike.
And I love their love story.
It's a lovely story. I had no idea about Ellie's mom and her role. I think Michael did either. Yeah.
If anyone out there has any matchmaking requests, they should send them to Ellie's mother.
That's a great idea.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that's it for us this week.
But we'll be back next week. We hope you're all staying sane out there and safe.
Stay sane and safe and stay inside and wash your hands. And
thank you, Dr. Fauci.
You're welcome.
We like you.
Inside Conan, an important Hollywood podcast, is hosted by Mike Sweeney and me, Jesse Gaskell.
Produced by Jen Samples.
Engineered and mixed by Will Becton.
Supervising producers are Kevin Bartelt and Aaron Blair.
Executive produced by Adam Sachs and Jeff Ross at Team Coco.
And Colin Anderson and Chris Bannon at Earwolf.
Thanks to Jimmy Vivino for our theme music and interstitials.
You can rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts.
And of course, please subscribe and tell a friend to listen to Inside Conan on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, or whatever platform you like best.